everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
And I am Sean.
Welcome back, Sean, and welcome back, everybody else. It has been a couple weeks since our last episode where we talked about the death of the MPL. If you didn't hear our thoughts on that, definitely be sure, go check it out. Let us know what you think. But it's kind of difficult right now. We've actually shifted our recording schedule. We're now recording in the morning, vice the evenings, because I'm up all night working. Other than that, though, a lot has happened in the Magic world. Modern Horizons 2 has released, and it is looking to be a blast. Wish I could talk from firsthand experience, but from what I see from Jerry, from Sean, it is just incredible what's happening in the Modern format. A lot of new decks, some decks even coming out of nowhere to win again, and a weird 5-0 from a deck that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But before we get into any of that, guys, how have you been? What have you been up to?
I've been good, doing summer classes for more nursing school crap. We're almost there, kids. Other than that, I've been playing Friday Night Magics with official Wizard sanctioning. Their blessing has been given to me. Still playing the old Modern format because cards haven't been released yet, but we're all excited. I've been doing Through the Breach. We started our new season last week. Leah played Dredge. She went 4-1. I went 4-1 on Through the Breach. We're both now tied for second, so we're going to see if we can sneak into the top eight as the season progresses.
Awesome.
Nice, nice.
Sean?
Yeah, so we got a little one going on at my house. She's 7 months old now, so that's taking up just about all my time and that and work.
Right.
During my free time, I have gotten some Magic in, a little bit of Flesh and Blood as well. Not going to get too much into that, but that game is pretty fun. Occasionally I'll go out to an FNM here or there. I've been playing four color Scapeshift in paper because that deck is super fun to play five mana for a Tibble and win the game. Online I've been pretty much honed in on two Modern Horizon 2 decks, and I've already bought all the pieces I need minus the pre-orders in foil because they are an absolute blast.
Nice. Well, what two decks are those?
The first one was one that I saw very early on, from actually Team Sunny Days. Everyone's been working on kind of making the food decks with Underworld Cookbook and the Chef. I'm just going to refer to her as the Chef because I'm not going to butcher that name anymore.
Oh yes. Asmo, whole bunch of other words.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like Splash Blue, which I have the pieces for if I want to go to there. Otherwise just green, black. And the other one is, of course, the Shardless Agent deck. Cascade's one of my favorite mechanics. So I built a nice Cascade four-color Rhinos deck because Rhinos go burr.
Nice. That's funny because that's basically the two decks I've kind of honed in on. I bought all the pieces for Retro Hollow One, waiting for those to come in the mail. Very similar to Underworld Cookbook decks. Mine's a little more gimmicky, trying to Burning Inquiry, but I might actually buy the remaining pieces of the actual food decks that are performing, and then Living End, because Shardless Agent made that deck happen again.
Yeah,
no. Yeah, we're going to touch on Living End a lot today.
Yes. Yeah, Shardless Agent is definitely one of the top tier cards. As I've already said, I've been working probably anywhere between 10 to 13 hours a day for the past 2.5 weeks. It's going to continue like this for the next, hopefully not, but potentially 2 months. We'll see. But after all this, there should be a lull and I should be able to get out and play some paper Magic. I'm going to try working Magic Online into my morning routine, which I can't wait to use. And the deck that actually kind of I really enjoyed watching, because I've been watching like Drew's streams. I've been listening to the updates from you guys, or reading the updates from you guys. And there's this Neoform deck that really stood out to me. Living End looks to be an absolute blast. Affinity and Hardened Scales, that looks to be fun. The Cookbook decks, absolutely. But being able to cast that the Storm Dinosaur now, if you will, for like 2 mana, it sounds like a lot of fun. And I can't wait to talk more on that later. But what we're going to do in this episode, though, is it's all Modern Horizons 2, right? We're going to be talking some of the staple cards that we think really stand out. Not going super in-depth on them, but then we're going to go through each of the some of the decks too that some of these cards have had a huge improvement on as well. I don't have a happy son downstairs. Oops-a-doos. That's fine. He'll be okay. So Let's get into the staple cards. I think the first one we need to talk about is a very interesting one because of some tweets that have come out from the developers. That being Urza's Saga.
Jerry, how much have you played with Urza's Saga?
All right, so I just started recently playing Urza's Saga because of a cookbook deck, if you can believe that. But not much. But I have heard that the card is actually broken.
I've been playing with it since day one when I started playing different variations of food decks. The card is very strong. The card is absolutely insane. It's tough. There's a lot of calls for bans on it already, which I disagree with. However, I can actually see where the complaints are coming from in the form that it's a land and it has no restrictions on it color-wise, so it literally slots into anything. And the reason I personally believe the card is so strong is because of the fact that it can kind of just make every other mid-range strategy irrelevant in the form of turn one play land and, well, we'll use food for an example, land and we'll play an oven. This isn't even an optimal start. You play land, oven, go. Turn two, you play Urza's Saga and you can play whatever else you want. Turn three, you play your third land, you just hold up mana. End of their turn, you make a construct that's currently a 2/2. You untap, Saga chapter three goes on the stack, make another construct while that's on the stack, you know, have 2/3/3 constructs, and then you tutor up cookbook. You know, have 2/4/4 constructs on turn four that you spent minimal mana on, and now you also have one of the key pieces for that deck to function.
It's great. I love it.
It's even better. Now that your Saga's in the graveyard, you can play land, cast Life from the Loam, and put it back in your hand. Now you're dredging Loam with a cookbook and an oven out. Oh, look, I just flipped over some Feasting Troll Kings. I'm going to sacrifice some of the foods for some of these cards I've been discarding. I now have 2 7/6s as well as 2 8/8 constructs out. It's turn five, for example.
By the way, Rob, this is the Jund food deck.
This is just a straight green-black version. If you're in the Jund version, you're also going to have some hollow ones out and potentially some Vengevines as well.
Small boys. I knew the deck was good. I knew it.
So there's a lot going on in that deck. Urza's Saga is definitely a key piece to it, and there's still a lot of people I see posting lists on Twitter without it, and I think you're just incorrect to not be playing it, especially in combination with Life from the Loam, with how well it works with Vengevines, Feasting Troll Kings, and then your Urza's Sagas. And if you're playing Loam, Cycle Lands work really well because it's a discard, a draw, and it's another Loam target.
Well, I mean, also, too, I pulled up, I just went through MTG Goldfish here, and I pulled out, like, the top four decks, or top five. Burn really didn't change, so I deleted it out of my browser. But I thought Amulet Titan has 4 Urza Saga in it now, too.
Yep.
Because,
get a free amulet.
Yeah, I get to tutor up Amulet of Vigor. Oh, and there's an Expedition map in here, a one-of Expedition map, which I can only assume is to grab an Urza Saga.
Yep. I played against a Titan deck with Urza Saga that I actually beat because he kept a hand that was very high risk, high reward. He led off with Urza's Saga, Amulet of Vigor. Untap, Urza's Saga, Amulet of Vigor. And then proceeded to miss his next land drop, grabbing his third Amulet of Vigor. Played a Valakut, getting the fourth Amulet of Vigor. Never saw a green source to cast the Titan that was in his hand.
Oh, man.
That Expedition map would have been really good.
if he would have 132 damage or something, all four Titans, all double strike, all beefed up, it's Amulet 5/8. It's so good in that deck as well.
And then, I mean, also too, I would say with some of the other decks that are starting to come about or could come about, like, I mean, there are plenty of 0-drop and 1-drop artifacts that we can grab here with Urza's Saga.
Oh yeah, I was playing against the Affinity as well, and they grabbed a Pithing Needle and named Cookbook with it while I was on that deck for a bit.
Nice.
Well, I was like, yeah, that's definitely something they can do. It was a very good play.
All right, next up, I want to talk about the card Grief. And this was one that, when spoiled, a lot of people were already making like big talks on. Because, again, of it just this no-cast ability, if you will, because it's part of the Evoke cycle. Jerry, refresh us on what Evoke is.
Sure. Evoke is an ability. It's an alternate casting cost for creatures. You pay this cost, the creature enters the battlefield, and then you must sacrifice it.
Okay, so you get any ETB effects that it may get, and most of these evoke creatures do have that enter the battlefield effect.
Or leave the battlefield effects, yep. Give or take whichever evoke creature we're talking about.
And what we have here with Grief is its evoke cost is exile a black card from your hand, and you get a Thoughtseize.
The thing that's been going along with this line of play is using cards like Ephemerate and Malakir Rebirth. Ephemerate just blinks it while the evoke trigger is on the stack, so it comes back as just a regular 3-2 with a second copy of Thoughtseize. And then at the beginning of your next turn, you get the Ephemerate Rebound, and you get another Thoughtseize. So it's basically a Hymn to Turok on steroids, is what you've built in Modern there. The Malakir Rebirth effect is just when it dies, it comes back. So you get one more Thoughtseize, but even then, that's still fine for a card that's a land on the backside.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, the entire Evoke cycle is super strong, just because it's... I think it's actually the closest we're getting to Force of Will in Modern, because you can evoke it for free on your turn, or with the ones that have Flash on your opponent's turn as well. For example, the white one is a Swords to Plowshare. Blue one's an Aether Gust for any creature or Planeswalker. The red one's bad. The green one
you are wrong.
In the bottom of libraries.
You are wrong. The red one is very good. You have never been Pyrokinesis, and it shows.
No, I haven't. I have never been Pyrokinesis. I've also never seen the red one in the league yet.
I'll help you with that, because it finished second in a Modern preliminary in Gruul Panza, four copies of Fury in the main board.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
In the main board, yeah. It's a Obosh the Prey Piercer companion variant.
Okay.
So using four copies of Fury as a way to deal with Mana Dorks and Prowess Dudes. So you can actually get Blood Moon Locks going pretty easily.
I like it.
I hate this whole cycle of cards. It's dumb. Terrible design. Would have been great back in a world of Faithless Lootings, Mox Opals, and Simian Spirit Guides. That is where these cards are at least fair, and even then I don't like it. You go back to the oldest format, Vintage, these cards are seeing four of automatic play in almost every type of Vintage deck. Bizarre Baghdad is playing four copies of Endurance and four copies of Subtlety because it can. That's insane how these cards are just filtering their way down, up and down, because of their free casting cost effect.
At first, I don't think a lot of people believe this card was actually going to become Modern legal. And that's Shardless Agent. And Shardless Agent has seen a lot of play in Legacy already. So for it to be able to step up to the plate, step down to the Modern Leagues, however you want to put it. All right. It's a 3-drop. It's one, a green, and a blue. And it has Cascade on it. So being able to Cascade into a multitude of fantastic creatures is always great. Jerry, I think you've played Shardless variants in Legacy, correct?
Yeah, I played Shardless Bug for almost a year and a half back in the day when the cool thing to do was cascade into Ancestral Visions.
So what are we cascading into with Shardless Agent now?
Okay. We have the Rhinos card, the one that makes 2/4 Rhinos.
Crescent Footfalls.
Yep. That's the thing. That is the thing we're doing. I'm even doing it in Living End as a sideboard option. You got Grave Hate? Cool. I got Rhinos. What are you going to do? You know, because 2/4 Rhinos as fast as you can end games pretty quickly.
2/4 Rhinos with Trample.
Yeah. Yeah, with Trample, yeah. Because nothing's blocking them. Let's see here. Other than that, you're cascading into Living End as it stands. Okay. Some people are trying other things with it. I've seen people trying to do the See Beyond from, or not See Beyond, See the Truth, sorry, from the Core Set 21, where it's a 2-mana sorcery. Look at the top 3 cards of your deck, put one into your hand. If you casted this spell without paying it from anywhere other than your hand, you get to just draw the 3 cards. So it's a modified Ancestral Visions to where I think it's actually better than Visions in those decks. Mm-hmm. Because it actually has a text box outside of, oh, if I don't have this on turn 1 or I don't cascade into this, it does nothing. So that card's starting to see a little bit of play as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at a list right now. It's I'd say a little bit on the control aspect here because we've got both Force and Negation and we've got Cryptic Command. As well as Fire and Ice, so a little bit of like tempo, if you will, too. But like
Fire being able to, great inclusion.
Yeah, being able to Shardless Agent and get into Crashing Footfalls. They got Jace the Mind Sculptors in here. Bone Crusher Giant, Brazen Borrow, because those both work very well with Shardless Agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you pointed out, Jerry, Subtlety, the incarnation for blue. Again, just being able to Aether Gust, it's always a good thing.
Yep, we get to play a few copies of that in Living End now. So, works really well.
Don't sleep on Shardless Agent. If you're new to the card and you're like, why would I want a 2-2 for 3 mana with Cascade? Trust me, you want the card. There's a reason that Bloodbraid Elf used to be banned out of Modern. It came back. The card pool is significantly better now, so it's not ban-worthy, if you will. I don't think this card's going to get banned at all. But being able to Cascade is an absolute, like, amazing thing.
Like you said, Rob, it's a 3-mana 2-2. It's a little bit worse than, you know, typical. It's a little bit worse than a Grizzly Bear. It's got the artifact type. You can weigh that however you will, but realistically, you're paying 3 mana and getting at least 10 power on the battlefield.
Yeah.
In some cases, you go Bloodbraid, Cascade, and the Shardless Agent, Cascade, and the Crashing Footballs. We did it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the nutso line.
All right. Next up here, we have a Legacy Burn card, and that is Flame Rift.
So it's seen a tiny bit of play. It really just depends on who wants to try it. The card that's been cut in the list that are playing it is Searing Blaze. I'm kind of mixed between it right now. Searing Blaze, there's a lot of matchups where the card does nothing, and considering the Zoo deck, which we're going to talk about shortly, it doesn't even do much against that deck. So maybe it is time to cut Searing Blaze and actually just put Boros Charms 5 through 8 in the deck list.
Yeah.
I think it's I think it should be a 4 of an all burn list. It's another 4 damage. Another Boros Charm. Really good.
And then, mm-hmm. That's the thing you need to look at. Okay, yes, it is a sorcery speed card. You yourself are taking 4 damage too. But that is just, like you said, Jerry, Boros Charm 5 through 8. Being able to get that much more advantage, and especially when you're replacing a card that is starting to really lose its punch because of the decks that do exist now. If you're a burn player, definitely give it a try. Don't let one FNM or one event skew your opinion on it. See how it is.
Yeah, there's too many. Even most of the creature decks just go way over the top of Searing Blaze, and at this point, it really is time to move on from it.
Yep.
The other thing, the damage to yourself, how it's bilateral, that's what Eidolon the Great Revel does. It's bilateral damage, but since you're dealing direct damage to the face, is it really bilateral? No, it's not.
Yeah. So, definitely keep an eye on that one. See how things shake out. Next up we got Jerry, you want to talk the entire elemental incarnation cycle.
I already kind of hit on that. Gotcha. How all the cards are just the free casting on either player's turn, the given effects. If your deck has a mass of that color, like Living End has a mass of blue, Ponza has a mass of red, I think you're just supposed to be playing 4 copies of these cards.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
All of them. Even the green one has like the best graveyard hate spell ever made. Like Endurance is that good. Endurance is seeing an automatic 4 of in vintage decks. So, because it's better than Leyline of the Void.
Nice.
So, yeah. The cycle of cards is very good. Poorly designed, I think, but that's neither here nor there.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next 3 here. You got 3 of them grouped together. What do you got here, Jerry?
Hey, I got Thought Monitor, Sojourner's Companion, and Nettle Cyst. These cards brought Affinity back into play, as well as the tapped artifact land cycle. The Affinity deck list really has been hurting since the ban of Mox Opal, and also Power Creep kind of pushed them out. But now that we have a Thought cast on a Affinity for Artifacts body, and a... I cannot think of the thing. The 7-mana 4/4 with... Not the Sojourner, but the Sojourner is an upgrade from that mirror enforcer.
Yes.
We got an upgraded mirror enforcer, and on top of that, we have more copies of cranial plating that come onto the battlefield with bodies already equipped to them. So Affinity just got the upgrades. The holdouts who are waiting for Affinity to get good, they got rewarded here.
Completely agree. I think these cards are all very good for Affinity. Perfectly balanced, in my opinion. They're not too strong, but they're also strong enough to see modern play.
Yep. The other thing is you have really, there are two variants of the Affinity list running around. You have just the pure Affinity for Artifacts. Play all the Affinity for Artifacts dudes you can. And then there's the Ragavan, Emery Lurker, the Lock, Mox Amber combo, if you will. Because Mox Amber plays a... In that list, it does make a very nice-looking Mox Opal comparison. So you have your choices on how you want to build the deck.
And that was one thing, too. Like, when the... I'll say when the tapped artifact lands got spoiled, there is, like, a part of the community that was like, holy crap, this is amazing. And then, of course, there was the one side that was just like, hey, these are all just tapped. They're not going to be that great.
I mean, if you go turn one Amulet of Vigor...
Yeah, that is true. Like, if we do add in Amulet of Vigor, which is just another artifact, again, to help out with that affinity for artifacts, going back to the roots of the deck, and also helping out with that cranial plating.
Like, I could definitely see someone trying it. There's no reason not to. It makes all your artifact lands come into play untapped then. That's gross.
The only issue is we do have 4-mana Karn.
Sure. You're already all in on artifact lands, and if you're able to inundate the board with Frogmites and Mirror Enforcers, who cares?
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think you just go too fast for 4-mana Karn.
Okay.
Nice. The only deck where the 4-mana Karn is like really, really relevant is the Gruul Utopia Ponza decks, because they can play a turn 2 Karn.
Yeah.
We got another Root Walla here, Blazing Root Walla, and Master of Death.
This one's more of a vintage hit for me, but it is, you know, obviously if you're Burning Inquiry in Modern and discard 2 to 3 Blazing Root Wallas, you get a bunch of free dudes on the battlefield. In Modern, they have actually overperformed with me, especially in the all-in Vengevine Burning Inquiry deck that we got to see streamed by Doomwake. Deck was great. It was fun to watch, and it's very powerful. You know, sometimes you just do the thing where I discarded 2 Vengevines and a Root Walla. Here's my Root Walla off the Madness. Cast a Hollow one. Get my Vengevines. You're dead, you know.
Yeah, a free 1/1 isn't you know, too much to really bask about, but it's the fact that it's a creature cast for Vengevine is what makes it so good.
I love how you said bask about. Nice pun there. on top of that, in Vintage, both of these cards have turned the Bazaar aggro deck almost into... It is almost functional without the graveyard. That's how good the deck has gotten, because it has both Basking Root Walla, Blazing Root Walla. And it was running Krovic and Horror, but then we switched that for Master of Death because it's blue, and it doesn't care about where it's positioned in the graveyard, alongside Squee Goblin Nabob. So now we can pretty much consistently activate Bazaar Baghdad every turn without it actually costing us our hand.
8 squeeze is very good.
Yep. And like, playing Krovic and Horror was very awkward because you had to decide how you were discarding your cards in your graveyard. You had to be very careful with your hand size. It's just way too much to make that card work as often as it didn't work. But this card's just free. It works. It's just pay 1 life, bring it back to your hand. Cool. And pitches the Force of Will, pitches the Force of Negation, more blue cards for subtlety. So good card's good.
And then, Jerry, we were talking about this before we got started on it. Scion of Draco, we got the General, we got Territorial Kavu, and Ragavan. All going into the same deck.
Modern Horizons 2 brought Zubek from Tier 3 to the Tier 1 aggro deck of the format.
It's right.
Pretty awesome. If you don't have the Turn 1 Ragavan or the Turn 1 Wild Nacatl, you fetch for Zagoth Triome, usually, is what I've seen, and then Turn 2 play a Breeding Pool. This gives you your domain, so you can turn to a Scion of Draco or turn to a Territorial Kavu as a 5/5.
Yeah, and both of which are outstanding, because with the Scion of Draco, that's going to give benefits to every one of your creatures that hits the battlefield, depending on the color of them.
Right. I think the biggest one you said was Territorial Kavu's benefit. It was getting Trample and First Strike.
Yes.
And then General Ferris Rockerick was getting... First Strike and Vigilance, which is super powerful combination. Like,
and all the golems he's getting as well that he makes, because they're all red and white as well.
Right. There's a line I saw someone stream. They went with the general on the battlefield. They went Bloodbraid Elf into Territorial Kavu, make two golems. Like, oh my god, you're just dead. Like, it was great.
And with the general too, it has protection from monocolored. So the most common of removal spells, being Fatal Push, Lightning Bolt, and Path of Exile, cannot hit it.
Right. You have to really dig into the dredges of Modern to figure out, how do I deal with this thing?
Yeah, efficiently without, you know, like, again, I would say wasting a sideboard slot for one card. But depending on what this deck does, probably won't be a waste. There are cards out there. You got Abrupt Decay. You have Assassin's Trophy. There's a whole bunch of different things out there you can do to get rid of it. But that those one mana spells that you really want to try to utilize for this, you can't.
Nope, they just do not work. Trying to think. I think Warping Wheel can target it because it has one toughness.
Yes.
Warping Wheel can target it. And so Tron actually has answers to it, which is good for them, I guess. Can't stand Tron, but whatever. But I love how this deck just came out of the entirety of the set and just like, hey, look at all these powerful domain creatures.
Right.
And then on top of that, it brings back Tribal Flames and Lightning Bolt to the format.
No, it's nice. It's, again, good to see all of this development that we have.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple, like I mentioned with the Affinity Ragavan Mox Opal variant, that's kind of a thing that's happening here too. Some people are playing Isamaru Hound of Konda as just another Mox Opal enabler. Okay. I don't think that's as good here as it is in Affinity, but you know what? Free mana is really good. So,
yes.
You know, turn two Bloodbraid Elf is acceptable in my world.
I do want to talk about how strong Ragavan actually is, because that monkey is really strong.
I'm waiting for the CEDH ban list to come out already. Like, I purposely not bought it because it's probably going to get banned in CEDH.
This is one of those turn one plays that genuinely say, answer this card or I'm going to win the game. Because if you don't answer it before it can attack you and make direct contact with you, it is ramp, card advantage, and it's you know, two damage for one mana. That's Goblin Guide level of efficiency.
Right. Next up, we got Zabiz.
Hey, it's the Modern Scales dude himself, bringing that deck back from the dead. One mana, 1/1 artifact creature, has modular 1, and whenever modular triggers, it gets an additional modular. It gets an additional +1/+1 counter, and then it has red, destroy target artifact you control, or white, Zabiz gains flying until end of turn. Just to note, this is a weird card. A lot of people didn't understand how it works. Modular triggers only when the creature dies. As it enters the battlefield isn't a trigger. That's just a state-based effect. So it doesn't, like, if I have a Zabiz out and I play an Arcbound Ravager, it doesn't come out as a 2/2. It's still a 1/1. However, if the Arcbound Ravager dies, those two counters both go over to Zabiz. If that makes any sense.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was the weird thing with it. Zabiz is the... Now we have a massive influx of one mana cards since the deck lost Mox Opal so long ago, that now we have Zabiz, the Ozolith, and Hardened Scales to highly reward us with counters. Just an influx of counters and the ability to keep them going. On top of that, we have the Llanowar Reborn pseudo reprint and Power Depot, where it's a land that enters the battlefield tapped, but it also has modular 1 on it, so it's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's got the artifact type as well for those Ravagers.
Yep. Also, the other thing I wanted to point out is that there is just enough insects in the deck to where you can play Grist if that is your choosing to play a more grindy or hardened scales deck, where Grist has all of the abilities that the deck actually wants. It wants to put a card in a graveyard and put a body on the field, which is fine. It wants to sacrifice its bodies to kill things, which is exactly what the deck wants to do. And it has an ultimate that basically finishes the game where Walking Ballista couldn't. The insects in the deck at this point would be your four copies of Zabaz, four copies of Arcbound Stinger, and then four copies of Grist, because Grist is an insect in zones that's not the battlefield.
Oh, yeah, wow. I think this is a good home for Grist.
I'd really be interested to see that. All right. And lastly, we got Dalthy Voidwalker.
Yeah, this card's it has a lot of words on it, to say the least. 2 mana 3/2 with shadow, so there's the evasion on it for, you know, slightly above the curve where you're getting 3 power for 2 mana. But then it's also got this really cool effect where if a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, instead exile it with a void counter on it. Then you can also tap and sack him to choose a card that has a void counter on it, and then cast it without paying its mana cost. So it's grave hate, and your opponents constantly have to play worried about anything they cast that you can now also cast for free. For example, I played against it playing Cascade. Cascaded into Crashing Footfalls. Opponent had a Voidwalker out. Now they also have 2 Rhinos because you cast it without paying its mana cost. Really strong stuff going on there.
That's dumb.
That's awesome.
I saw a Twitch VOD of someone playing Modern Rogues and get a 4-1 in a league, and he played against Through the Breach and milled over an Emrakul, which was exiled with Voidwalker. Then he cast Emrakul for free, took an extra turn, and killed his opponent with Emrakul.
On top of that, if you have 6 permanents to sacrifice before with the attack with Emrakul, when it hits the grave, Dalthy Voidwalker takes it anyways. So we can't combo with Voidwalker on the battlefield unless you're just dead on the spot. Magus of the Leyline, this is. This card is really freaking good.
So hang on for a sec. So you can... Oh, yeah, because it just... That's wild. Oh, my goodness. Sorry. Like, everything's just clicking for me now, and I'm really excited.
I mean, if you untap... If you're on the play... You play it on turn 2 out of a Jund midrange list, and your opponent is playing Tron, and you turn 3 cast a Thoughtseize, steal their Karn, and then activate Voidwalker to cast Karn. Like, that's just the game, right? The game's over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm the Tron deck now.
What's that?
Tron deck now.
I'm the Tron. Look at me. I'm Tron deck now.
So you said about how it's in Rogues and whatnot. Rogues is pretty much like the new mill deck, right?
Kind of. I don't know if it was just a fringe deck that someone was playing. I also played against it in the white-black ephemerate list. They brought it either in and out of the sideboard, or they had it in their main board against me. It's just a good card overall, because at worst it's grave hate and you'll steal something great. Yeah. And then it's also a 2 mana 3/3 with evasion. You can't block it unless you have shadow.
I was going to say, like, I feel like I would want to play this in a mill deck also.
Yeah, absolutely.
Throw everything into exile, and if something happens and you can't fully execute your mill plan, now you have this to fall back on and take their best threat to put on the field.
Like, this card absolutely hoses stuff like Dredge, where they can't even kill it without, you know, they can cast a Conflagrate from hand for 4 mana after all their other cards are been exiled. You just never sack it. It just sits on the battlefield, and your opponent can no longer play Dredge.
Yeah, card's gross. Like, good God. Like, it's beyond, like, just alongside Kaya's Guile, it's another just straight-up main deckable graveyard hate.
Really strong card. I think people are still hyping over Urza Saga and some of the other stuff that this guy really hasn't seen a ton of play yet. I think this is going to be another one of those contenders for cards that, why did they print this?
I like it.
I think it gives 8-Rack another piece to its tool. Like,
mm-hmm.
The mono discard deck has not been ever really good in Modern, but it always needed pieces, and this is one of those pieces.
This is a very good piece for that deck.
Yes. All right, so looking at some of the decks here that have improved, we've actually talked about quite a few of these, but there's a couple we still need to hit on. Living End is a deck that has come back with a vengeance.
Yeah, it transformed from the Jund style deck to now a pure teamer deck, where it's not even just pure teamer, it's more just mono blue splashing green and red. Yep. Because of Modern Horizons 1 and Amonkhet.
Yeah, being able to get your cycle creatures like a striped river winder, I know is one of the big ones in there. But
The biggest upside with the deck, and I said this before, is Force of Negation would be broken in a deck that can successfully play it and combo on your opponent's turn. This is that deck.
And I mean, to show its strength here, we had 7 copies in the top 16 of the challenge. Yes, it didn't win it, but still, whenever you're representing about half of the challenge, and I mean, the challenges, for those who don't know, these are Magic Online events, and generally they pull what, 1 to 200 players, right?
Something like that.
So it's a classic, if you will. So getting half of the top 16 at a Star City Games Classic, it's pretty nuts. We talked about affinity and hardened scales. Jund Food, we definitely covered Cookbook. Fantastically fun deck. I want to skip mine here because it's not really that great. It's just I got to see some nonsense with it. Enchantress is now a deck in Modern.
As a Burn and Dredge player, man, I hate this.
Yeah.
But as my first Legacy deck I ever played, I love this. The deck got absolutely power crept out of Legacy thanks to Delver's Secrets. The day Delver was printed was the day the music died, and I couldn't play this deck at all. Like, I was just getting absolutely slammed sideways by Force of Wills, dazes, and then the fast 3/2s with flying for 1 mana.
So I mean, like, yeah, having Enchantress presence, we still have there's a few other cards that help our draw engine, but also getting Sterling Grove in the set too, I think really helped out the Enchantress
Yes.
deck.
Sterling Grove, Enchantress's Presence, Solitary Confinement, those are just automatic four ofs in the Legacy Enchantress deck. On top of the printing of Sanctum Weaver, which is a functional Serra Sanctum, which is a reserve list card, that if you untap with Sanctum Weaver with the Enchantress deck, it's very hard to lose because you're generating 5, 6 mana every time you tap it.
Yeah.
I played against a Enchantress variant that led on my game one experience was a loss, and it led off with them playing Utopia Sprawl and an
Yep.
Arbor Elf, which, some standard stuff for a lot of stuff. Then he played, some of the Enchantresses to draw some extra cards. I tap out, I don't have Force of Negation in hand. He plays Freed from the Reel and puts it on his Arbor Elf with a Utopia Sprawl that he then played with blue. Made infinite green mana because that's how that works, and used the is a Theros Beyond Death enchantment creature that gives your stuff uncounterable. It also has an activated ability where you can turn your lands into creatures.
That would be Destiny Spinner.
Yeah,
That's an automatic four of in this deck.
Destiny Spinner to kill me with all his lands and infinite mana.
That's great. You could also
So I had.
stick that on Sanctum Weaver and make infinite blue enough times.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, that is really neat. Proceeded to bring in all of my removal and make sure all of my Force Negations were at the ready. Because
Right?
now he's playing Enchantress with a combo kill. I was like, that was pretty neat.
Freed from the Reel, make infinite mana, Destiny Spinner, make all my lands big dudes kill you.
It's awesome.
Yeah, definitely wasn't ready for it, but it was a very, very cool deck.
That is not the way I was playing my Enchantress. I was just doing the classic Starfield of Nyx with Sigil of the Empty Throne, making angels and modified Opalescence kills.
I love every bit of this. All right, Jared, you're really excited. In fact, so much so, if I was reading this as a text message, you have screamed ad nauseum at me.
Yes, the deck is playable again. Profane Tutor is our lord and savior. That card is nuts. This card is dumb. Like, oh my god. Ugh. The suspend cost on it is the perfect cost. The removal of time counters on time with Lotus Bloom is perfect to give you the win. It's nuts against control because if they counter it, they run the risk of dying to the combo in your hand. If they let it resolve, you just grab your one copy of Ad Nauseam out of your deck and then kill them on their end step. Yeah, Ad Nauseam's good again. It has the pieces to make it happen.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see some gameplay from you on that.
I'm now on one copy of Ad Nauseam, and I might be considering just cutting that down and turning it into a Cylundi Vision.
All right
Like,
then.
we're on one copy, and the only reason I have that one copy is for the control matchups. But because we're a four Thoughtseize main board deck now with 3 to 4 pact of negation, give or take your build. We're so good against control as it is. I don't think we need it. Other than that, we're a little bit softer to Teferi, even more so. But the sideboard has been, you know, now we just play almost a full suite of mystical disputes to just make sure Teferi never resolves. And I get all my blooms and tutors.
All right. We've already discussed Zoo. This is kind of a shock here. Winner of the Modern Challenge, Merfolk.
Modern Preliminary, not a challenge. Sorry.
Modern Prelim, but still. Like, Merfolk making a name, if you will. Like, every once in a while it happens. What was it? Like, once a year in Paper Magic, right? We saw. That's sickening. I had to say it like that. Once a year in Paper Magic, we saw.
Right, because there are people that live and die by this. But the it was not playing the Rishadan Dock Handler, whatever it's called. No copies of that. It was 4 copies of Svilin of Sea and Sky and 4 copies of Tideshaper to really screw with mana bases.
I was on food, and I lost a Spreading Seas and Spreading Seas on a creature. Really good against Urza Saga. Because that is a very neat interaction with the way sagas as lands work, where if they become anything other than a saga and lose their chapter abilities, a saga with more counters and chapter abilities is sacrificed immediately. So it turns into Stone Rains.
Yep.
Wow.
Tideshaper is a 2-mana Stone Rain in Merfolk right now.
So this deck plays 8 ways to kill Urza Saga, as well as 4 ways to kill the constructs with the 2-mana flash, creatures lose all abilities, tap it till end of turn.
Yep.
Because that makes a construct a 0/0 with no abilities.
Yep. And I think that's like the one upgrade his deck actually needs to make. I think because he was only playing 2 Merfolk Tricksters, that's what the card you were referring to, was in the sideboard. Mm-hmm. I think this is a main deckable card.
No, I saw it in the main board.
Okay. The winner's list did not have that. Granted, he was doing the Tideshaper thing, so.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's and
the god as well is absolutely absurdly pushed, in my opinion. I think they gave it a lot of stuff to make sure Merfolk was modern playable, and this card is really good.
Merfolk needed it because they've been doing Cure of the Great Glass Spinner for over a decade now, and that card is just obviously it's busted in spirits because it's spirit. I think Merfolk just needed a Cura that was actually playable and not Coppola Warden of the Waves. Not playable.
Giving all your other merfolk a form of protection, and then as long as you have 2 merfolk itself, some pretty good protection with indestructible, on top of drawing a card every time it swings, mostly with indestructible. Very good card.
And yeah. Jerry, this has an ability I believe that you said merfolk needed, and that is the Ward 1. We talked about that. We'd probably have to go back at least a year, maybe even 2 years ago. That having a way to protect them with an ability as such with Ward 1.
I remember saying that Merfolk needed some type of ability. And I think I reiterated that when Strixhaven was spoiled. I said the Ward ability is really powerful. Frost Titan had it. And obviously that card was a house in Standard. And it needed to be put on the Merfolk as a creature type in order for it to actually function in this format.
So, yep, we got our first prelim win with it, if you will, and then we'll see what else can happen with it.
Other than that, the only other card of note is that it plays 4 counter spells in the sideboard.
Nice.
Just 4 counter spells. I don't know why. I mean, I guess you can always play, you know, turn 1 Aether Vial and hold up 2 counter spells as a counter spell as necessary.
Yeah.
But it's really deep in the counterspell pool there.
Tyler would be incredibly happy about this next deck. Hulk Footsteps.
Yeah, man. I said that specifically with the printing of Unmarked Grave, that it would at least make the deck somewhat functional. It's a guaranteed way to put a copy of it into your graveyard. Between Unmarked Grave and Through the Breach, we now have a consistent way of getting a copy of Protean Hulk into the graveyard to do the whole combo involving Viscera Seer, Body Double, Mog Fanatic, and Revelark.
Yep.
To help people who don't know what it is, Protean Hulk goes to the graveyard. You find up to 6 mana worth of creatures. You get Body Double, which is a 5-drop in blue, and Visceraseer, which is a 1-drop in black. Body Double becomes a copy of Protein Hulk, because it copies a creature in a graveyard. Visceraseer has Sacrifice Scry. So you'll sacrifice the Body Double, which was a Protein Hulk, and then you find two other cards. You'll find 5-mana Revelark and 1-mana Mog Fanatic. Mog Fanatic, you'll sacrifice it to deal 1 damage to the player. Use Visceraseer to sacrifice Revelark. Revelark has an evoke ability, or rather, has a leave the battlefield ability, but it also has evoke. When it leaves the battlefield, you choose 2 creatures with power 2 or less from your graveyard and bring them back to the battlefield. You choose Body Double, which is a 0/0 in the graveyard, and Mog Fanatic. Body Double copies Revelark, and then you loop.
I saw another combo with it as well, where you play... Your whole combo consists of getting a Visceraseer, of course. And then when the Hulk dies, you get a Walking Ballista and a Machias the Unhallowed, because that makes a ballista that will constantly have Undying and still 1/1 to sack it afterwards.
That requires less pieces. I might actually do that.
It's really, just another combo kill, I guess, but... Same shell to get Hulk into the bin, reanimate it however you can, sack it. And then, you just Machias and Ballista, and the way they happen to work with the Visceraseer out is infinite pings.
Yep. You because the Ballista is not a human, you ping them for 1, it goes to the grave, it comes back with a +1/+1 counter because it persists because it's not a human.
Well, the thing is, it gets +1/+1 as well, so you have to have the Visceraseer out to sack it over and over again, or else it just stays as a 1/1 construct.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right, it does. Okay, you ping them first, then sack it, scry 1, got it. Still works.
Yeah, because then you're just going to keep removing the +1/+1 counter it gives anyway. Undying doesn't care if it already used Undying, but that if it has a counter or not.
Right.
And then... Sorry.
Nope, go ahead.
I was just going to move on, but if you got more to talk about, go ahead.
I was also going to mention Persist and Makeshift Mannequin have also seen some copies in this variant of the deck. Persist being the new card that returns target non-legendary from the graveyard with a -1/-1 counter on it. It is a very cheap way to reanimate a Protein Hulk from the graveyard if you had to discard it to some effect. So that's another way to do it. The go-to way to reanimate it, though, is still Footsteps of the Goryeo, because yes. It has the sacrifice on it at the end of turn.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then another wild deck here. Cats. Cats went 5-0. What? What is this Cats deck? Who put this in here?
I put it on the list. That would be me, Rob.
All right, talk a little bit about this Cats list. What from Modern Horizon 2 made Cats?
I'm pulling up the list right now. Give me 1 second.
Yeah.
Then you got to share screen that crap. I need to see this.
Okay, I know it was Naya. I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before.
What was a card that was in it?
I know it was running the Lord from Modern Horizons 1 that gives all Cats +2/+1. It was running 2 of the changeling that gives you card advantage when you name Cats as a creature type.
Was it playing Kahira the Orphan Guard as a companion?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was playing Kahira as a companion as well.
I can make some inferences, though. It probably played Wild Nacatl.
It did, in fact, play Wild Nacatl. I do know that.
Steplinks?
I don't know if it played Steplinks. It did play the 2-mana, the green-white, where you can pay green-white to give it indestructible. When it dies, it becomes an aura with the activated ability of itself on any other creature.
Bronzehide Lion.
Yeah, Bronzehide.
Did it play Loaming Lion? It's a 2/3. It's Kurt Ape, but White Cat.
I don't think so. I don't remember. I looked at it briefly last night right before I went to bed, and Lightning Bolt and Lightning Helix and Collected Company, but no Aether Vial.
Probably couldn't afford it if you're playing Cats. We're doing a cheap deck here. This is what we call budget.
I mean, even Collected Companies are still 15, almost 20 bucks a piece right now. Absolutely key in this deck, because nothing like surprising your opponent with giving all your Cats +4/+2 off of a Collected Company.
Found it.
Okay.
You got it?
Okay, here we go, guys. So it did play Lone Lion. Played four copies of Lurrus because Lurrus is a cat.
Yeah, the main deck Lurrus.
Lurrus is a cat.
Screw using him as a companion. I got Kahira instead.
Electric Bob playing cats. I love this. Electric Bob is a known entity as well, right? Like he randomly 5-0s leagues occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Realm Walker, I get to play cats off the top of my library. Feline Sovereign.
This is awesome.
Oh, get to this main deck, destroy your Urza Saga crap. I like it. We're in.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, freaking cats, man.
Masked Vandal, because that's a cat. I totally forgot Lurrus was a cat, honestly.
What is that? Feline Sovereign? Is that the one that destroys the piece?
It doesn't destroy the land, but it destroys an artifact. I mean, whenever one or more cats you control deal combat damage, destroy up to one target artifact or enchantment.
Excellent. And I love it too because the picture is the cat destroying an artifact there on the tabletop.
Yep, it's the modified Trigon Predator for cats.
This is it's great.
Trigon Cateter, he tipped the cup over.
And one last bit of shenanigans I want to talk about here then is we saw it get spoiled and we're like, how can we kind of have fun with this? And that is Thrasta, Tempest's Roar. It is a 12-drop 7/7, but it has kind of a pseudo-storm ability, if you will. It costs 3 generic less for each other spell cast this turn, and it has Trample and Haste. Trample over Planeswalker, which I think is an awesome ability. And then it has Hexproof as long as it entered the battlefield this turn. I got to see our buddy Drew get stomped by not just this card, but also Fortifying Drought in Neoform. So for those who don't know Neoform, we gain a bunch of life. We use Crystal Brand to draw a whole bunch of cards. When Simian Spirit Guide got banned, we knew of some avenues where it could still be viable, but we just... It wasn't the greatest, I would say. But with Mox Amber, with Springleaf Drum, we're able to do a little bit more, like fixing or generate some free mana. And with Fortifying Drought, you gain 2 life, and then target creature gets +X/+X until end of turn. On turn 2, Devilvoir got hit with this 54/54 hexproof dinosaur that he paid 2 green mana for. And...
Hey, man, Nourishing Soul is free and fair, right?
Yeah. Yeah, gain 15 life with the Atoctin Worm. Continue to reduce the cost of your Tempest Roar, and next thing you know, you're gonna beat base.
Hey, look, I got this 3 green mana. Let's go, Thrasta, Fortifying Drought. You're dead.
Well, the best part is Thrasta is green, so whenever you cast your Mox Amber, then that's going to boost your Fortifying Drought. Oh, and then you can tap it for the green mana that Thrasta helps make, and then you get to cast it. It's a whole bunch of awesome stupidity.
I love it. I love it.
Gross.
Right? Like, he F6. He's like, I wonder how I'm going to lose. And then he's just like, oh, cool. A 54/54. It's like, well, what do you do at that point?
You die because that is hexproof and can't be countered.
Exactly. But, no, I mean... That's just some of what Modern Horizons has to offer. There's a lot going on with this set. A lot more to be discovered. And hopefully with Paper Magic coming back, we can continue to get more and more data. I do like that it is on Magic Online because, as I've said before in the past, people are more apt to brew on Magic Online than they are on Magic Arena. So we're not just going to see like one deck become the best and a whole bunch of people just play that one. We're able to figure out how to beat those better decks. Does anybody else have anything to add for what we've discussed so far today?
Nah, man. Sweet set is sweet.
Yeah.
Feasting Troll King is the best card in the set.
Yeah.
Feasting Troll King and Oval Chase Track Worker, whatever it's called, that stupid uncommon from Aether Revolt.
Yeah.
Well, didn't Feasting Troll King come from a different set?
It did. We're being smartasses.
Okay, I love it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Those cards became viable now.
I like my black uncommon that was unplayable to go up in price from 5 cents to a quarter because it comes back when food tokens enter the battlefield.
Wonderful. But We're going to talk more on Modern Horizons here. It does release, I believe it is next weekend or next Friday, right? Or is it this or tomorrow?
Anything is next week.
Okay, so there'll be 2 weeks of online play. Pre-release prices and everything else we're going to talk about in our next episode, the finances of Modern Horizons 2 and where we think it is in value. But that's going to do it for us today. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out. Sean, thank you very much for joining us on short notice. Really appreciate having you and good talking to you again. Be sure to check us out on all social media outlets, Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. You can check us out also on all your podcasting outlets. That is The Snapcast with that wonderful trademark P. And it's going to be great, man. I can't wait to have more episodes come out and finally play some Magic. But that's going to do it for us. Hopefully everyone has a fantastic day. And we'll talk to you then.
Oh, snap.